Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
Routine expeditions.
Oh, you're in luck then, because this is anything but.
Yeah, but they do say that phrase about 1,500 times.
Yeah, it was in the theme song of Land of the Lost. Give me a master's soul, make mine. Bring me away from all mankind. You can keep your Cenozoic, but I'll think that Mesozoic. Give me a Mesozoic,
mine. I'm gonna put a small guess out that the annoying banjo thing later in the film was also the theme song to the original 1970s Sid and Marty Krofft TV show.
That is correct, yes. I believe that is the original one. They brought it back in the 90s with a different cast and a different theme song. Same basic concept. Before we get too much into this, I would like to, first of all, place the blame squarely on the viewer, or listener rather, because, yeah, we put out a little poll of movies our guest, Rob Campbell, suggested, and y'all voted for that one instead of the correct answer, which was Step Up 3D. That's on you, and now you get this. But
sure. Also, the correct answer was Brick, but yeah.
There's not dancing in Brick. Not enough dancing in Brick.
But neither this nor Step Up 3D would have included my famous "She's a Brick and I'm Dr" impression.
That's true. We suffered greatly for not being able to hear that.
Exactly. Hi, Rob.
Oh, hello. I'm in now. I'm in. I'm here.
Yes.
Which one of those three movies is the one that with the character of Moose?
That is Step Up 3D.
Oh, of course it is. I
yeah.
Knew that. I
That's know. Why just... else? What other character would you need besides
He's
Moose?
Cinema's finest, greatest actor.
He's
character.
Magnificent.
I would like to say right off the bat that, yes, I didn't know that you were going to open those up to your idiot fans and they were going to choose this idiot. No, I thought later John texted me and I was like, well, you can change. You don't have to listen to your goddamn fans. You can do whatever you want. It's your podcast.
No. Well, to be fair, I'm partially to blame in that I can't imagine talking about a dance movie for an hour. However, I want to walk that back just a slight bit. I hadn't watched Land of the Lost first. So now that I've watched Land of the Lost, like, yeah, you know, that probably was a coin flip. Probably could have just done the dance movie because, I mean, yeah, it's Danny McBride and that hairy guy that was big in the 90s. Like, it's like, oh, this could be funny. I was
Wait,
wrong.
Chaka?
Yeah, Chaka was big.
Oh,
in the 90s.
No, I meant Will Ferrell. Yeah,
but to give viewers some kind of
context. The word is context.
That's the context, yes, for who Rob is.
I win.
And what his whole deal is. Rob and I go way back. We made movies together, little short films back in our group Cinema Queso, and he is now currently on a podcast called Green Shirt. You want to tell us about that?
Green Shirt, it's a newbie's trek through the Next Generation. My co-host Cameron is watching Star Trek The Next Generation for the first time. I am watching it technically for the second time, but I watched it when it aired, and I was, you know, 9 through 15 or whatever, and remember nothing. So basically, I'm also... basically watching it for the first time. And then our co-host was our friend Marcy, who knows it pretty well. We are replacing her this season very soon with a new host. Her name is Bobby. Anyway, so we have a person that knows Star Trek, and then we're the two idiots, and we just go episode by episode. We are entering season 5.
How many seasons are there? 5 or 6 or
there are 7? Jesus, I should know this. I actually forget. I think it's 7. Maybe it's 8.
I think it's 7 as well, but I don't know why I think that.
There are 7. And yes, John is a frequent, at least once a season guest on our podcast.
I've been on there a couple of times. It's a lot of fun. You guys should totally check it out.
I often refer to John whenever I have a podcast of any sort, which I have over the years. I always have John on if I can on the first episode. I like to think of him as my Paul F. Tompkins.
We did have that one Fart Patrol.
Yeah, that's right. We did start a podcast called Fart Patrol.
Fart Patrol. That was huge.
Yeah.
So you probably are all familiar with that as well.
Of course. I wonder if that's still in the existence.
I would have no idea.
Anyway,
I don't
listen
to podcasts.
That's
and
right.
I'm not going to type that into a search engine.
I don't own a television. So this movie, you guys.
Yeah. Land of the
Lost.
Oh,
yeah. We should probably talk about this.
2009's Land of the Lost.
I'll tell you right now, you can insult it all you want, but I have some fondness for this movie. I know you guys are probably agree with the Rotten Tomatoes 26% fresh, I imagine, or maybe the 32% spilled popcorn bucket, whatever that one was that I can't tell.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I didn't hate it either.
I don't love it.
It just happened.
It's kind of a non-entity. Yeah, it's very much like an airplane movie. Like, I kind of have the same opinion about it that I do about Sonic the Hedgehog, where he's like, I've killed some time, and I'm not... Some damage was sustained, but I'll recover.
And now I'm mad horny.
Yes.
Well, I have a question. I don't know. I don't want to hijack.
Oh, go ahead. There's no format to the show.
I have a bad habit.
Yeah, also, we're tired of talking to each other. So, like, just go. You just go ahead.
Well, I want to know what you guys... Are you feral heads, or are you on the team anti-feral in general? And what are of his projects do you connect with?
I'm going to say a complicated answer of, I think he was good when he started, and then you can watch the light die from his eyes slowly as the years go on. And this movie is dead-eyed Will Ferrell, where you can tell I think he wanted to transfer into dramatic acting. It didn't work out for him, and now he's stuck doing the same shtick. Like, oh, great, I'm going to take my shirt off and make a joke out of my chest. And you just see it hurt him on like a deep level, which, I mean, I do find that amusing for a wholly different, series of reasons, mostly Catholicism based. But yeah, I liked his early stuff. The one where he's in school with one of the Wilson brothers, I found terrifically amusing.
Oh, Old School?
Old School.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
Oh, I was going to say, for me, I like him. I think there was a period of time, probably around when this movie came out, that I was a little bit like feraled out. Mm-hmm. And I think so is America, based on the box office. But I do like him. He's got a very particular style. I don't love everything he's in. I think, like, the Anchorman, whatever. Like, the first one was great, and then no thanks. I actually like some of his serious stuff. The Everything Must Go movie, I enjoyed him in that. But, yeah, no, I'm a feral dude. Although, I prefer Ferrell and Adam McKay. Yes. I like that combo.
And then, of course, Colin Farrell. You're a big Ferrell head on that.
That's who I was talking about. Yeah.
I am realizing at this moment that the spilled popcorn bucket that I saw on screen when I paused the movie was the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. A spilled bucket of popcorn is bad. A full upstanding bucket of popcorn is good.
Oh,
I was just going to say that doesn't really make sense. A full bucket of popcorn is bad because you have not eaten the popcorn.
That's because you surely were too into the bucket. Movie. If you're because you've kicked the bucket over because you're mad.
You don't want to hear that, like, locust-like chewing.
Yeah, and you're just like, Matthew McConaughey, what the hell? And you've kicked the bucket of popcorn.
Now, the problem...
I was just going to make a cum gutters joke. You talked at the perfect time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, my problem with this movie having a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes is that Rotten Tomatoes and Will Ferrell movies are always wildly wrong. I'm looking at it now. You know, of course, Zoolander, it's a 63%. That's technically fresh.
I completely forgot he was in that. I never think of him in that movie. But
Mugatu.
Yes.
Mugatu. Right. The Old School is only 60%. Elf is 85%. I enjoy Elf. I have a child. We watch it at the holidays.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we did. We did an Elf ep.
Anchorman is 66.
That's far too low. Anchorman's delightful.
Yeah. Like,
exactly. If Anchorman's not way up there, then I question this entire list.
Which leads me, actually, a question I have for Rob. You own Land of the Lost on DVD, right?
I worked at a video store, so I have a lot of DVDs that I don't need to own.
Is this like the theatrical release, or is this the like too hot for television version? Or the
I don't believe that this DVD release had. I don't believe this movie has anything but the theatrical cut.
Okay.
Well, there's a suitable for kids cut.
Oh.
That came out that took away some of the saucier moments. And apparently there was the original cut, which was R-rated, that was actually supposed to be quite good. And when I found out about that, that made this movie make a lot more sense because of just kind of how some of it flows and some of the kind of the temperature of the jokes. Like you can tell like, oh, there probably were like actual hard jokes, but they had to cut around them. So that's why you have like this weird combination of... like basically, you know, 13 and under jokes, and then some, like the girl gets her tits squeezed for about 5 minutes. You know,
this movie does kind of fall into this chasm of being not enough in either direction. It wants to be more like edgy, it feels like, but then it's not. But it's also not too soft, almost like Boys to Men, not too hard, not too soft.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then it's wants to be like reverential for the show, for what it was, but then also kind of ignore it, which to me, I don't care. I remember seeing some of the show when I was a kid, and it gets specific where it's like, well, the entrance to the cave that they go into is the same as in the show, which I'm sure if you're a Land of the Lost head, that's amazing. But I don't particularly care. Like I wish the sets were cheesier than what they were. And they're fairly cheesy to begin with. But I really wish they leaned into, like, how stupid, you know, how ridiculous the show was. And, like I like how they kept the prisms and stuff like that. But I kind of wish they would have gone more, like, weird, almost Doctor Who with it, which is a strange thing for me to say. But I think sometimes it's a little too slick.
That's fine. That's a fine criticism. I do really like the look and color of this film. I think it's compelling. And I don't know if I know a lot of things. I mean, there's a couple scenes that are look Burton-esque, and some that are just like theme park-esque, which I don't think you see. I don't know, especially like in the top of the volcano and he's dancing across the lava somehow. Like, I don't know. I do like the look of this film, and I think it's maybe not singular, but I think it's, there's not a whole lot of movies that look quite like this.
No.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same temperature. It looked really nice. I just saw John's comment from her. I kind of wish they made like a little, I just cheesed it up a little bit or niced it up. Just, it's right on that line where there's a couple, like a lot of the costumes where I actually laughed at, who's the main, the guy that's in the crystal, Zorn or something like that? No, Enoch. I like how Enoch is still shitty, but much better than the other Sleestak costumes.
Yes.
But like, I sort of want that level of commitment to the bit on everything. But there's some spots where it's like, oh no, this just looks like a nice movie, which kind of then it throws it into weird relief of when they do like the cheap thing joke. So either go full cheap or full good. This weird kind of hinterland threw me off a bit.
Because like, I mean, the CG isn't bad for the time necessarily. And there's actually not as much of it. Like the first time through, I kind of felt like I was like, oh man, this is kind of pretty CG heavy, but there's really not. There's a lot of practical locations. Like, and that big desert that they're hanging out in is just gorgeous.
Yeah. Like the little weird objects, just, you know, like the motel, yeah, and the pool, and I don't know. Like, but yeah, like the Sleestaks are a compelling creature. The fact that they, you know, stuck so closely to their original design. And I again, also haven't really seen much of the original or the 1990 remake. But I got a little kick out of the Sleestaks looking so weird and cheap. And then also having the weird multi-mouth teeth level.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. That was like, a neat way to take a to play with the concept. Like, right. Yeah, we're still going to do this like crappy looking thing. But here we've made it like terrifying when it needs to be.
I don't know how much you looked into the director and whatnot, if you have, if you want to drive that boat, or if, I have a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, like I looked into the Brad Silberling only to discover to my horror that he in fact directed City of Angels. Yes. City of Angels, the remake of Vim Vendors.
The superior, oh, Christ, the superior. I saw that. The superior, yeah, to Vim Vendors.
Sure, that's one way to put it.
oh God, that's him.
If you're basing your quality of movie, like if your rubric is Meg Ryan in it, then yeah, yes, it's a superior movie.
That's right. And Peter Falk's in the original, right?
That is true.
So that,
yeah, he was the original Meg Ryan.
And an amazingly awkward Nick Cave scene.
The body of work is also inexplicable. From City of Angels to Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Events, which makes sense with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then Moonlight Mile and Casper. Not in chronological order, of course. Casper, the children's movie with Christina Ricci. It's just a weird, wide-swinging.
But yeah, so he's had a variety of stuff to do. A lot of TV work. Which I think this movie feels a lot like a more of a television show than a movie. And some of that is also the writing. There's a couple of, what's his name? Dennis McNichols, I believe is the gentleman's name, was the one of the writers in this. He's an SNL guy, helped write The Ladies Man as well. And
Chaka is an SNL alum as well.
He's, yeah, one of the Lonely Island guys.
Oh, is that who that is?
It, yeah, is. And it makes me wish, I mean, it does make me wish that this was a Lonely Island movie.
100%.
I'm sure it seems like he had, like, they, I don't know, it feels like it has some DNA shared with a Lonely Island joint. But yeah, not my favorite Yorma performance. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have much to work with.
I was just glad that he's an adult. I didn't look, it just looked like a child. And during the tit grabbing scene, I'm like, oh, this is, I really hope that's 18 and above. Because, well, that's like a fucking awkward scene.
Even as an adult, he sort of looks like a child. But,
oh yeah, that's, I mean, good for him. He's going to age well. I'm proud of him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's probably got great abs. I hate when they cast kids in movies and then make them do, you know, adult humor stuff. It makes me kind of uncomfortable.
I'm glad you called them abs for the record. And not.
Well, no, okay. No, the reason I say cum gutters is I had a very awkward description of Matthew McConaughey on the show that I've repeated since then, of referred to him as having cum gutters. And John brought up the sacred name of Mr. McConaughey.
Yeah, I just don't know that the context made the phrase cum gutters any better.
How long was I trying to make it better? How long have you known me?
That's true.
What
That's
I do true. Is pretend I said something wrong and then just keep hammering it into the ground. And it's called just, the Dave Letterman School
just
of Comedy.
Move on.
Yeah.
Both Farrell really Farrells it up, and McBride totally McBrides it up. And I defend these things because throughout history, comedians, there's, you know, the Tramp, you know, I mean, we have Chaplin only played one character, and Buster Keaton really only played one character, and, you know, I mean, Carrot Top only played right one character. Mm-hmm.
As Citizen Kane.
So that's right.
Citizen
so
Top.
I think it's okay. There's a, you know, history of comic performers who don't have much range. Although you're right, Farrell does some drama, and that it works in some cases.
Well, and I think in this one too, like, he's often like a blowhard kind of character.
Yeah.
But I think in this one, there's not much more to his character other than being Will Farrell. But it's fine. Like, right. It's what he does, and I enjoy watching him do it. So, I mean, the opening bit with Matt Lauer, America's favorite rapist, Matt Lauer.
Oh, is he like a shithead?
He's
oh,
gone.
Yeah, he's bad.
Oh, God damn it. Like, I take back my compliment.
Yeah, so, because when you were texting me, you're like, oh, I'm surprised that Matt Lauer has such great comedic timing. Like, there's a lot about Matt Lauer people were surprised about.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, shit, I take that back. Now
2017,
I feel bad for
2017 sexual misconduct claims. When you Google it, like, the third thing down is like, what happened, Matt? What happened, Matt Lauer?
Yeah.
What happened, Matt
Lauer? Is that
Lauer?
Just Google asking? Like, the company
say,
Google?
It doesn't say what happened to Matt Lauer. It's like addressing him. What happened, Matt Lauer?
Mm-hmm. Well, he had a button on his desk that could, like, close and lock the door.
Yes.
From
well,
the
let's
inside.
Pretend that didn't happen just for one
yeah,
second.
Yeah, let's do so that.
No, I was just surprised because anytime you cast a news person in it, in a movie, like Al Roker, it's just going to be death for that scene.
Yes.
But yeah. Matt Lauer actually had really good timing. Like, his responses were like, one point he was referring to not wanting to take his book or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just a really quick, it's like, oh, God damn. But now, oh, well, I mean, of course.
It's okay we'll separate the art from the artist. Of
right,
course,
yes.
The artist that is Matt Lauer. We'll separate.
Those two bits are actually like the high points of the movie for me. Like, I liked those two scenes a lot. Because, I mean, I'm always a fan of just like, the complete jackass or idiot interacting with the straight man and the straight man and like not picking up any signals from it. Like
yeah.
just,
and
just
also,
continuing
the,
on.
The beauty of his facial hair right there is I'm not one to talk about that, but oh boy, that is some fine bad facial hair that of course he drops it immediately. It's so perfect. Oh, also, so are you guys familiar with, I mean, let's talk about more problematic people, but have you ever seen the David Icke interview where the first time he went nuts with Terry Wogan?
No.
So David Icke was a soccer presenter. He was an ex-goalie and did a soccer presenter until he went on the Terry Wogan show on the BBC in all purple and claimed to be the son of Christ, the son of God.
This is the same lizard people guy.
Lizard people guy. However, that interview is very, not very similar, but has so many echoes and shades to the interview with Matt Lauer at the beginning. And this movie has lizard people in it. Like, are they trying to talk to me? Is this like some kind of secret shit here?
Watching it with a tinfoil hat on.
Yeah. So if anybody at home wants to see it, look up David Icke on Terry Wogan. It is, just keep in mind, this is like it would be like Charles Barkley coming out and started talking about, you know, oh yeah, it turns out that I'm God incarnate and I only wear purple now, which doesn't sound that weird, but yeah.
I did like right off the bat, a failed handshake from Will Ferrell. I'm like, all right, I'm on board. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, before that, there was the first scene, which I would just touch on very, very briefly, was the stranger crash lands in a strange land. It's the titular, you know, the land of the lost. He is lost in this land. And I really hoped that was going to be, I assumed with this, this filmmaking team, that it was going to end up being some wacky character actor later on that they were going to run into, but nope, just a dead guy.
Yeah. In fact, I forgot when I was watching it again, like I forgot that scene even happened.
Right.
Because it's really ancillary to the rest of the film. And it kind of, I mean, arguably takes away from some of the surprise of this.
Right.
Where you're like, you know, oh, this other guy is here. Rather than if you, you know, just enter into this world and experience it along with them, that might be a little bit more fun.
If this were a Sandler film, that character would be like Steve Buscemi or, Rob Schneider.
Yeah, Rob Schneider.
Later
on. He would
on,
have a hilarious accent.
He had gone crazy because he'd been living there so long. I totally expected that. But hey, bucked expectations.
Yeah, he'll pop out with a sleeve stacks or about the fuck and go, you can do it.
Right.
And everybody
yeah.
gets like
yeah.
a big laugh.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
It's almost like I was talking the other day about how I kind of miss the Saturday afternoon movies of just like being at home and turning on Fox 42 or whatever and just hear some dumb, like, Gary Busey cop movie, I'll just watch it. And this seems like a perfect movie to just sort of encounter on, like, the USA Network or something. And then just...
I'm glad you brought up Gary Busey there, though, because I didn't look up. Is Danny McBride's friend from the Hellmouth place a Busey? Because he has Busey-ass teeth.
Yeah, he's Busey-esque, but I don't think he's officially a Busey.
There are so few names in this movie. There's only three. I don't know what Anna Friel is from. I should look
Pushing
up.
Daisies.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I know her from.
Wait, is that Pushing... That's the lead of Pushing Daisies?
Pushing Daisies, yeah.
No, fuck. I didn't even recognize that. That's like one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, I've only seen the first season. Like, I never... Or the first episode. I enjoyed it, but I just never finished watching it.
You have to... If you enjoy the tone... Like, there's one part where they're driving through, like, a field of daisies towards a windmill singing They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse in Your Soul.
Yeah.
And it's just the kitschiest, like, oh, this is so fucking great.
It had a particular voice that, like, I'm not always the biggest fan of, but they 100% committed to it. And so, you know, good for you. I'll stick with you for that, you know. It felt more genuine than just, like, this seems popular right now, so we'll do this style. It just felt like – it was – because I think it was Barry Sonnenfeld.
Pushing Daisies?
Yeah. It was
no, it was –
Oh, it was Ryan Murphy.
That's Ryan Murphy, yeah. It's a guy that, like, works now in weird kitschy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely yeah.
This movie might have maybe Sonnenfeld was what I was thinking of with some of the look of this movie.
It had some of that. Like there were moments that it was a little like that kind of kineticism, if that's even a word that Barry Sonnenfeld has. But some of it is a little staid. I would actually like it to be a little less staid.
That's true. Before we get to the land of the lost, the John Myersiest joke is the Your Own Damn Vault poster. This is the sort of thing that John will text me at like midnight.
Yes.
Which is great.
Thank you.
I do love, I don't always reply to it. Sometimes days go by and John must be sitting there wondering what I thought of his.
I assume that you're still laughing.
Yeah. My most recent, I would like to go ahead since I have a platform here. To pitch my my cop movie that I've been writing, it's about a cop who has the Benjamin Button disease, and you know what his catchphrase is? I'm getting too young for this shit.
Wow.
Yeah,
I love
a lot of John is making sense to me now. Because one, I didn't realize you come from the queso days, so now like all these pieces are coming together. Yeah. And after that joke, I was like, all right.
But the vault joke, yeah, it's that Will Ferrell has after disgracing himself on the Matt Lauer show and being, you know, a laughingstock in the scientific community talking about time warps, he is forced to teach high school science, and Anna Friel meets him after a class and is telling him how great he is, and he says how much he blew it. And the thing is that it's his own damn vault. And there's a Successories type poster that features a pole vaulter that has that. And it's a dumb runner that really only shows up one other time.
Well, I mean, he mentions it.
He does.
And then he vaults.
Call back to it. Yeah, it is dumb as hell. But again, it's a thing where like, they committed to this absolute waste of a joke, and I have to give them credit for that.
And it pays off in a pretty funny way.
Yeah, they didn't oversell it. Where like I think because they like you said they only mentioned it like the one other time, just to remind you that yeah, this was a dumb like throwaway line, and we're actually going to come back to it.
This is, of course, as I will talk about on Green Shirt all the time. This is Chekhov's vault, and they bring it up in the first act, so you have to pole vault in the third act.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was originally what all of Chekhov's plays had pole vaults in it. Like sometimes it was just jumping over a dollhouse. Sometimes it was much higher.
It depends what year it is, because sometimes they're Russian vaults. Oh, such a dumb joke. Sorry.
Yeah.
Please cut that. See, Poland gets taken over by Russia frequently. So the pole vaults would become the Russian vaults.
That's...
I get it. Okay.
Get it? A Polish joke.
I mean,
In the 21st century, a Polish joke. I'm making a reference to this movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
There's one later.
That's not good. My first.
I both love and hate myself.
The first thing that I remember groaning at and saying, oh, this movie is going to be hard to defend was the Captain Kirk's nipples.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. I'm sorry.
That was an element that felt like, you know, Will, people loved it when you did this stuff in Anchorman. Just free ball it and say something funny here.
Yeah. People love it when Steve Carell, very forced. Steve Carell does it. People love it when he shouts things during the waxing. Anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Would you like it better if it was about Picard?
Yes.
Yes.
Because you're a Next Generation. All right. I see where the source of your anger is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Picard's nipples are much better.
Yeah. Picard's nipples are the better captain.
Yeah.
Now, what about if we go like Pike or somebody like that?
These are all. Does he even have nipples after the incident?
Well, I think in the Discovery timeline he does because he's foxy as fuck.
Oh, that's true. He in the Discovery?
He is. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I stopped watching it, but he was definitely there for a while, and he is a silver fox.
It is during this time that he mentions the second problematic figure where he got a photo with Jared from Subway. So not only is Matt – so there's Matt Lauer, who's been canceled, obviously. And then,
yeah, that's true.
And then he's – oh, I got a photo with Jared because he used to have an eating problem.
Comedy is timeless and is funny forever. Yeah, that was a thing that
– Hey, wait a second. What year did this movie come out?
2009? I think
that must be – That must be post Jared being in trouble.
No.
No,
really? Jared was originally Donald Trump's vice presidential pick, and then that came out.
I don't know why that would change anything.
I'm going to Google what happened to Jared.
Well, I've got just bookmarks on my computer of all the people that are falsely imprisoned by some of man's laws.
Yeah. Free thinkers, you call them.
Hey, you believe in Adam and Steve. I believe it, and I'm not going to finish this joke.
Adam and a much younger Steve.
Yeah.
But that was a thing with his eating that was, unlike the vault thing, was like a two-line joke that I thought something else was going to happen to it. That he – because he – I did like the gag when you're kind of introduced to his stress at eating, where he's eating a donut filled with M&Ms, and the reasoning was that way when you're done eating the donut, you don't have to go eat some M&Ms.
Yeah, I like that too.
But then, like, it's when she finally convinces him to build the tachyon amplifier, which was his amazing invention that will let him cross the time warps or whatever that he's envisioned. He goes on an eating binge and just lists off a bunch of different fast food restaurants he went to before passing out, which felt a little bit like, look, we got these sponsorships.
Yeah.
How are we going to use them?
You got Jared from Subway should have made a cameo.
Yeah.
Should have made an appearance. I am glad they didn't like later flash back to his fatter days, like his like friends would do or whatever, you know. Like,
yeah, no, I was waiting for that, for a more sort of like
fat in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, it's some sort of problematic kind of thing, but no, they just don't even do anything with it. He throws back for later when, like, I think I would know something about food presentation, but it's not worth it.
Right. It would have been funny if he was just like every time any food was found in land of the law in the land. That he was just like can't help himself, but oh, we'll try this.
Yeah,
all the eating scenes are gross.
So Rob, being a Star Trek guy, let's discuss this together, you and I.
Yeah.
How do you feel about them using tachyons and something that doesn't travel through time?
Because
this goes to a different dimension.
See, I care very little about the accuracy of the science in TV shows. I will often defend. They're always, I mean, Star Trek always writing themselves out of corners by just making up some science. So the show wouldn't exist without nonsense. So unfortunately, your tachyon, I have no strong opinions on tachyons.
Well, I do, and I nearly got in a fight at a bar once
for
the term tachyon.
Let's hear it. You have 45 seconds to tell us everything you hate about this use of tachyons.
Absolutely nothing. It's just one of those dumb sciencey words they also use on Star Trek.
Okay. Oh, that's it.
I did make the mistake about thinking about this movie. And like,
oh, you poor summer child.
The whole thing, because she convinces him that his tachyon theories might be real by presenting him with a fossilized imprint of what looks like a Zippo lighter with like Big Cat on it.
And then she storms out.
Yeah. And then he puts his lighter in there. And he's like, wait a minute, that's my lighter. But I thought it was another dimension, not time travel.
It's both.
That's what they established.
Yeah. Because it's something that I didn't even remember until, again, like the second time through. I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't actually make any sense.
They said it's all time happening simultaneously. That's why they could suck in like bits of Vegas and Planet of the Apes sets. And I don't know where else that statue's from. But they don't go back to where they came from, as far as I know. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's better than, I think if they had tried to explain time travel, John would most certainly have hated it. I
mean, yeah.
So. Oh, yeah.
And I think particularly for this kind of movie, you don't need to. You right. just go, dare, let's make some pee jokes.
Well, in the alternate location. cut, you had to feel real emotion and love to make the tachyon emitter work. And then you go into the Land of Lost behind a staircase. So John really would have loved it.
Yeah. McBride is introduced, and again, 100% McBride. Does McBride ever stretch in anything? I really like McBride. I love Righteous Gemstones is a great show.
Yes.
Eastbound and Down, terrific.
Yeah.
But has he ever done anything but McBride?
In that Alien movie, he was toned down McBride. Yeah. Like, he was more like McBride, but from a different part of the South.
Right.
Yeah, I think that it's all just kind of variations, because I do think that his character in Righteous Gemstones is different from Eastbound and Down.
But McBride is, he is classic McBride. Mm-hmm. This is where they do introduce Chekhov's fireworks, which also doesn't really pay off. Also fizzles out at the end.
Also does not. Literally. Oh, I get what you did there. Oh, the cave is a reference to, forget it. This is the dumbest thing I was ever going to bring. That cave is a reference to a Fortiana kind of thing. I think it was Come See the Iceman, one of the original Gaff frozen Bigfoots. And that is what the outside of that cave is referencing.
Oh.
There's like seven nerds out there. They're like, yeah, go King.
Because the original series, the initial expedition is what? They're just on an expedition?
Yeah.
And this happens. Yeah. And so I like that this is the ride version of it. It sets up the movie nice. It's like, this isn't actually like scientists doing a thing. These are idiots that are just going on a ride because there's tachyon energies here.
Right.
And I think that kind of like tonally that worked for me, because it's how little this movie takes itself seriously.
Of course. And I really, of course, do not understand what they did to open this portal. Was it the machine he built? Or was it the crystal she was wearing around her neck? Was it dropping in the water, fritzed it out? I have no idea what caused it.
Yeah. He sent out a tachyon resonant wave.
Yeah, it was that he was harnessing the resonant frequency of the tachyons near the time crystals, which, by the way, science has just found recently. So somebody's telling the future.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he goes on Terry Wogan and he starts talking about how he's the I think the in very heavy quote science is that thing like basically like tunes in a frequency. They went to a place with a whole bunch of those crystals and caused the thing to open. Because I think it's the same thing that's happening later when they're in like the Lizard Man's cave and he puts the crystal that she's wearing in his dealy.
Mm-hmm.
To use very scientific terms.
What I honestly really like here is when it takes them on this like rapid ride and then dumps them over the waterfall, that didn't like happen in the real world. Like it they were already transported into this weird liminal and it's a weird like sort of intellectual way to describe this, pseudo intellectual way to describe this, I should say, but I do like how just nothing in the real world changed. It didn't just like tear a hole
right
in the actual reality, or like the ground opened up. No, they're just gone now.
I found that notable as well. I enjoyed that about it.
Well, I wouldn't be me if I didn't point out the thing that I found notable in this scene. So they have a slee stack, and I'm going to put in quotes here, costume in that cave. Now, later in the film, we know that when slee stacks are going to be, in flagrante delicti, a.k.a. bumping cloaca, they shed their skins.
Mm-hmm.
So has a slee stack fucked in that cave?
I think, yes.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
I think that was actually Jared's cameo. That was something Jared.
That's his old size, like 48 pants.
His old pants. I think there's probably a healthy backstory and show Bible for this, where, the old founder of that Cave of Wonders or whatever had stumbled upon this dimension at some point and brought home a slee stack skin, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and fucked it.
that actually might have been the original purpose of this rest stop, was like, come watch these lizard people bang. But then, like, that's – you kind of got to limit your audience, because you can't have underage kids seeing that stuff. So you open it up.
Oh, that's probably where the Jared thing happens.
Yeah. Jared shows up, like, here's an idea. Here's how to trap some children.
I'll watch them.
But, yeah, so he I did like that the fake scary lizard man was actually a slee stack. I didn't get a kick out of that.
Yeah. They find themselves in that desert that they land in is where I started thinking it was, obviously Beetlejuicy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Especially like, it goes to later, but that the most Tim Burton-y part is the desert where there's inexplicably Las Vegas in it.
Yeah.
just feels like, yeah, Tim Burton thought of that. It's just, it feels so like crisp. Everything's super clean, even though it's dystopian. So yeah, that is Burton on the nose.
And then Yorma's introduced. Chaka is being, I don't remember Chaka's, I already forgot Chaka's story. Why Chaka,
like they're in the desert and they've realized that they've traveled to this location, you know, this magical location, but they've lost the tachyon converter, whatever it's called. And they just happen upon the tribesmen of Chaka, these two other ape men things, about to sort of ritualistically murder Chaka.
He's being shunned. He's a prince. I don't remember.
He's a prince.
Yeah. He later explains he's a prince who pooped in the town well.
That's good.
But Holly stops the Manafreel's character stops them, and then that's when you get the scene where he's grabbing her boob because she's like, "Oh well, I worked." And this, I've read a couple of reviews where people were complaining about this, but honestly, like this is dumb, but it's fine. Where that she's like, "Oh, I spent time in an ape house. I know his primitive language."
Yes.
Fine. I mean, like, the movie's shown you what it is. It's fine.
It would be worse not knowing what he's saying. Yeah. So,
they're able to breach that language barrier. And while he paws at her boobs.
And that leads to some of the better material in it. It's Chaka talking to them, but also some of the cringiest stuff. Because I found him to be the most, like... There's a scene coming up where Chaka dances to the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. And I would be very embarrassed if I was a fucking grip on this movie, let alone the actor in the monkey suit.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, it's the closest we got to Step Up 3D. So I was, on board.
You know, but you felt the loss of Moose. And
that's right.
You know.
I did not feel Moose. But yeah. I was reminded of Yorma dancing in Hot Rod, doing a similar dance move in Hot Rod. And that the infant brain that I have, I'm like, oh, that's fun. Look at it. He's doing that funny dance.
Immediately after this, they fall into a cave.
I like that this desert is full of just random holes that just swallow people up all the time.
And then they while in the cave, then they get grabbed by vines.
Yes.
And then encounter a T-Rex. Like, it's all just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
But I like just immediately sets up that this world is terrible. And dangerous, but also like in a way that doesn't matter, you know. And that's like the stakes in this movie really don't exist. Like you don't actually get the sense that anyone is in any real danger. But
well, anybody with a name, because keep in mind we did one of the first scenes in the film is watching an astronaut get murdered,
right?
And then that poor ice cream man gets eviscerated live on screen.
That is true. I'm kind of surprised that happened. I thought they were going to rescue that guy.
Yeah. I thought, the vines, I mean, there was some stuff in this movie that made me feel, they were off-putting. The vines were kind of a little bit on the creepy side. I was like, well, that's, I mean, obviously later there's stuff that's very off-putting, the blood-sucking scene, of course. But I found the vines, this was the first time where I'm like, oh, yeah, the effects are better than I remember. Certainly could have been worse. And then the T-Rex looked pretty decent for 2009. I mean, they had the technology.
Yeah, it held up, yeah. I like and it's a dumb joke, but I fell for it. I did like the T-Rex being so fucking pissed that he got called a walnut brain. I just, the way they animated it turning around and just showing anger at it, that was fucking fun. And
again, the fact that it was like a runner where he throws a giant walnut at them and then it cuts to him like looking angrily. Like it's just silly, but it worked.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, ultimately, like, I know, like, we're saying a lot of positive things about the movie, currently, but it is very much, and that's part of the problem with comedies, doing comedies in this format, is like, well, it's funny or it's not.
Right.
And I found a lot of this stuff funny, but it's also like...
So subjective.
And it's also like inconsequentially funny. Like, I didn't, you know, it's not a movie that like... You're going to learn to laugh at the human condition all over again, where it's just it's Will Ferrell dumping piss on himself. Like,
yeah.
But also, but we're talking about it, that we have the luxury of skipping the, you know, I don't know, whatever, 45 seconds of them walking up a hill.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this movie, it's just like, really? We need this on the screen? And then there's jokes that don't land. And you're like, oh, great, now we're 3 minutes away from the last time I was abused. And this movie's got a lot of, it's not bad, but it's just not... There's some good stuff in it.
Yeah.
And then there's just, that's happening in front of me. That certainly is it is very TV-like, where it's shot in a way that's totally ignorable and you can do your ironing while it's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do think, I do agree that, mentioned earlier that that the locations are nice and it does look kind of nice. It is like, it's not dynamic in any way, really. It is sort of a nice looking TV show. And I guess the Tyrannosaurus being named Grumpy is a thing from the show, but again, right. Like, I don't
know. Who cares? Yeah. They really,
I mean, like this is an example of like, I'm sure there are purists of this series that were like, they did this wrong and this wrong. But like, this was a remake that is fun. It's like the Brady Bunch movie where it's like, look, here's the basic concepts of the show, but we're going to like riff on it and do some weirder stuff with it that I think is totally fine.
Yeah.
And particularly when it's a fucking TV show that was a Saturday morning, you know.
I don't know that there are major land, like, I mean, I assume there are. I don't know if there's a huge contingency of Land of the Lost, like, super fans.
LOLers.
I'm probably wrong about that, but I feel like the things that they did to reference the show seemed almost, like, on purpose shoehorned in. I don't know.
No, it reminded me of when they remade Swiss Family Robinson in Space, which is called
Lost in Space.
Right.
Lost in Space. They did it on Netflix recently.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was just kind of like they went, oh look, here's a hand wave. Like that character is called that one's name. That's Dr. Smith. That's and right. That whatever you feel about that show, I thought it was somewhat watchable, but it was the same kind of vibe as this. Like I've never seen Land of the Lost. I knew the word Sleestak, but I totally followed it. But this is, I think, the first time in my being. You know, let's face it, I'm a lonely boy. I watch a lot of shit. This might be the first time I've ever watched something like this that I haven't known the source material. Huh. And it didn't take away from it for me, I think.
Right. I don't think it adds. I don't think it adds knowing the original source material. I think adds anything to it.
Well, and I think that's my earlier sort of complaint about it, like wishing it was a little cheesier, is having seen some of the show. But if you didn't see the show and you're like, you have this movie where it's just like, here's some like third grade sets. You know, maybe that wouldn't be your jam. You know, I don't know. So I understand the choice that was made by it, but I do think like tonally it would be fun because I'm sure, you know, you're spending a whole bunch of money from a giant film studio and they're like, let's have it actually look decent.
So after the walnut gets thrown and Shaka does the dance that Alex hates, and then the
it's not that I hate it, just made me feel bad. It made me feel bad for people involved.
It's yeah, I'm okay with that. Then the first, another off-putting scene of the spiders coming out of the food.
Mm-mm. Oh, yeah, that's nightmare fuel. I didn't like that at all. Yeah. Them crawling on you. So one time I was playing some disc golf, and I was trying to find a frisbee that was in a bush. So I picked up a stick to try to knock the bush back a little bit. And I wasn't really paying attention, a.k.a. high as fuck. The stick I'd picked up was, I guess, in an ant hill. And ants started swarming my hand. Hey. And that is the worst feeling that's in the history of fucking humanity. Yeah, no. That is horrible. So anytime, any movie, like with the spiders in your head, oh, fuck you. I know what that feels like.
So you were playing disc golf and high? That doesn't track.
It is, I'm going to say the first, maybe the second time, just because I want to be humble, it's ever happened.
I think the Olympic Committee should look into your doping. If you're going to represent this country in the sport of disc golf...
And well, you know, you laugh, but it actually is on the docket for being included in later Olympics.
Why not? Sure.
I hope they medal in Frolf. I hope they just call it. I hope they call it Frolf.
Yeah, I think they should. You call know, Olympic Frolf.
Here's let me just tell you the annoying thing about that, just because I think it's funny. Is they're legally not allowed to call it Frolf because the term frisbee is copyrighted by the WAMO Corporation.
That's right.
It's the dumb. I love that kind of annoying detail. Like, no, of course it's called fucking frisbee. Everybody knows it's called frisbee, but some pedantic ass at the WAMO Corp. It seems like no, you don't Xerox something. You reproduce it photographically. No,
I wonder how far away they could get from it, but still call it Frolf. Like if they called it like Frosby or Frobo, you probably couldn't rhyme with frisbee.
It's all about that F. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the motto of all frisbee golfers everywhere.
Well, like I think the Lego brick is not, it's not a Lego. It's a, there's all kinds of,
I forget what it's called, but yeah, there's some really dumb legalese to it. It's like joining plastic fun blocks or something like that. Yeah.
And you know, I love those things like that Lego and then, you know, the Skittle, a single Skittle is a lentil. A Skittle is lentil.
Are you serious? That's what they're called?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That makes them taste bad.
That's disgusting. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with lentils, like in things, but the Skittle lentils.
I like a lentil, but if I want to eat a Skittle and they go, oh, here, have a lentil. Ugh, no.
So is Skittle like, what is a Skittle then? Because they're Skittles plural.
It's the group noun. It's like a murder of crows.
Just this individual piece is called a lentil.
So it's a Skittles of lentils? Is this? Fuck.
It's like a bean. It's like a lentil, a bean, right?
Right, okay. But what's a Skittle then?
Well, no, that's they just wanted wanted the commercial of them, like, you know, popping the Skittle off your thumb and going, flick your bean.
Yeah. Yes, that's what they want.
Yeah, that's what they want.
Yep.
So here's a little secret. I'm just going to tell Rob this. Is I just try to make really awful sex jokes because we've like been talking for like 5 minutes and one of us has to edit this. So
it could be a way out.
No. Yeah, sorry, John. Yeah. I'm finally going to let you in on the secret.
That's why all the transitions on this show are so smooth.
That's right.
Well, you know, it's I put the goo in segue.
I mean, bad news. You can't cut this out if I continue to refer to Skittles lentils every 5 minutes.
That's true. The audience needs context.
There's a reason the audience knows the term cum gutter, because I repeated it enough that it was too hard to cut out. I think one of the funniest jokes in this, and it's somewhere around here,
yes,
is never trust a dude in a tunic.
Is a
funny bit of comedy right there.
I like that.
Well, just the things that generally pay off, like later, like it's a funny bit, like in its on its own. It's like that throwaway line on 30 Rock, where it's like never follow a hippie to a second location. Like, it's just a funny gag, but the fact that it, like, comes around later that Enoch is in trouble and you know that because he's wearing a tunic. Like, that's his shame tunic.
I like that Danny McBride is right a few times. He's not always the total idiot.
I mean, he's a business owner. He's got, like, a rad, you know, boat. So yeah, he hasn't been late in 6 years, but that's one thing, you know, whatever.
I mean, I didn't like him right off the bat when he makes some joke about her being wet, which was another terrible, not good joke.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was... Oh, that was a bad one. And I guess it's funny. I mean, it's not, but I hated the tit mugs.
Yeah. Sure.
Uh-huh. It's just like, it's just easy. Like the only people that are going to laugh at that are just like people that have bumper stickers. It's just, it's gross.
That's an example to me of like, I don't think it's funny, but Danny McBride saying it is funny to me.
And it paints a picture right away of who he is.
Yeah. Like, I 100% agree that it's like a lot of the body humor stuff, like the urine scene later is just pretty like, well, fine, whatever. He's dumping piss on himself. But like in this particular case, that I think I'm cutting it some slack because it is Danny McBride. But
he does pronounce words in a funny way. But it's so early in the movie and it's just like, I'm going to have to hang out with this guy for the next fucking 90 minutes. Like, let's not make him like where it's like, oh, my favorite kind of woman, big titties, no head. And I got a handle so I can make her fucking tit fuck me or whatever.
It seemed very one note.
And that's me. Like, that's me saying it's gross.
Right. That's Dr. Cumgutters himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I agree with that 100%.
You should be worried about that statement.
The auto-tune crystal was memorable. These are the moments. There are moments that I remember from the viewing many, many years ago. And auto-tune, the spiders coming out of the egg was one. The auto-tune crystal.
Auto-tune crystal kind of annoyed me that I found it amusing.
Yes.
It's like what's up kind of joke where it's like, I'm referencing that thing we all know. But God damn it, it actually amused me.
Yeah, it's what you possibly would do if you came into contact with a auto-tune crystal.
But it's just it's a thing that like Will Ferrell, again, if you're on board with Will Ferrell, this is kind of what he excels about. Like when he has his arms he just goes, oh, you can feel it in your forearms. Like that, there's nothing about that line that's particularly funny, but when he says it, I found it hilarious.
Yeah I don't remember. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say we skipped the one of the weirder casting choices in this. So they get called there because Enoch is talking about the Zarn, this evil space Hitler, played by Leonard Nimoy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe did he do shitty movies towards the end of his career? I mean, I know he's in those Transformers.
Yeah,
but
I think there's weird. Your answer. I think they had him booked for the day to do the Transformers movie or whatever. It had a half day or something like that. Like, look, we got some slop left over because Leonard's a professional. No two takes for Leonard. You want to just say these two lines while we have you? Because it's like it. He has like one line of dialogue in the entire thing.
Yeah, and they loop it later. Which, I guess that's the thing. They just went a cameo. Just gonna say.
Yeah. That would actually be, I wonder if you could do that. Just make an entire movie based on paying different celebrities for their cameo.
Oh, John, we should do an episode of the show where we get someone from the movie to do a cameo and pretend it's like they're on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, just, here, I need you to read these lines exactly.
It's Alex's birthday, and he would love it if you said this following line.
Yeah, and then it's Morgan Freeman going, and then Alex said, come gooders.
Right, yes.
Perfect.
Is Morgan Freeman
impression
on cameo?
I don't know. It's literally, I can't do an impression. Maybe if I just made my voice deeper, I could just pretend it's Morgan Freeman.
The impression was spot on. That's not my complaint. It's more just like, that would be interesting, because if you're Morgan Freeman, like, you could rake in the teens of dollars of getting people like, will you say bootylicious or, you know, whatever stupid thing. If I were Morgan Freeman, I would do it, but I don't have dignity now.
Well, you can charge like thousands of dollars. Like, I forget who I was looking at. Like,
oh yeah,
it was
like,
Jim,
I think,
Brewer.
Like George W. Bush or somebody like that. Like somebody that should not be on cameo, but it was like $1,000 for like 5 minutes or something. You know, some like absurd. Holy shit, they're making money just out of, you know.
I wrote down the quote. Are you saying chorizo tacos? And I can't remember what they mishear. What they're mishearing there. But I really like that part.
Yeah, he is saying, oh, it's when that, because they discover the when they go to the Sleestak temple, one like they come back to it later.
Oh, Sleestaka.
Yeah, and they can't figure out what he's saying, and then Uncle Phil stands up, and there's a thing written in English that says beware Sleestak behind him, and he's like, we'll never know.
Are you saying chorizo taco?
Do not mess with us. I'm very hungry right now. But there, this was a moment where this thing just happens and whatever, where like the Sleestaks come out and Anna Friel's Holly pulls off her belt and she's like, I'm going to, you know, whip your ass. And Will Ferrell figures out that her belt buckle reflects light and is like, oh, well, obviously I should shine it into the eyes of these statues.
Like, this is, of course, Chekhov's belt, because she does again use it in Act 3 to beat the asses of the Sleestak.
That is correct.
Chekhov's belt.
It's more Chekhov's ass slapping, because it's teased, and you finally, you know, if you're going to introduce an ass,
that's right,
it's got to get whooped in Act 3.
But okay.
But they kind of repeat the same, not the same joke, but like there's also a laser pointer runner later.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it's a weird, like, I don't know. It's the exact same idea that they just show up later with the T-Rex with the laser pointer in its teeth.
But this was a bit that I couldn't, like, I couldn't cut it slack of, like, well, you know, it's just a silly movie. Where it's just like, this doesn't make any sense. Why is this? Why did he go like, oh, you know what we should do is shine this into an eye?
Well, if I may just...
Please don't.
Okay, I won't. Anyway, Rob. Why would Indiana Jones think, oh, let's make sure it weighs the same when I take this Aztec? It's just that that's in a good movie, so you don't question it. It's just
Indiana Jones, you know, you get the sense that, like, this is not this guy's first rodeo. That's in fact why the movie is not called Indiana Jones and the First Rodeo, because it is not.
That's the
That's the new one.
I found a problem. And
Tachyons.
No, this is worse.
Scientifically, I'm not sure this would work.
I'm just gonna just, John, let's fill in the blank. John, why do you think I have a problem with the way they collected the urine?
Something with teeth?
No, because dinosaurs, being reptilia, probably would have a cloaca, not a dangling dong, which would be both shit, urine, and reproductive fluids coming out of the same hole. You wouldn't go under a dangling dong and collect it, as Danny McBride implicated.
Counterpoint.
Shut up, Alex.
This is from a firm anti-cloaca camp. Are they Tyrannosaurus Rex? Are they dinosaurs the way that we know them? Because this is sort of a weird alternate dimension kind of thing. Maybe they're from a dimension with dinosaur dongs that can pee.
Yeah,
the dinosaurs have.
We didn't see the hadrosaur. Yeah, he said he just collected it.
I mean, Danny McBride references the dinosaur dongs, and like, I know that Marshall doesn't dispute it, but maybe I think even with the cloaca, there is still a stream of urine.
There's a stream. I'm just saying that, like, he equates it to trout fishing, which I love the Richard Brodigan reference. But like him trout fishing, you feel like that's there's a pole, there's streaming water. I think there's dong all over this metaphor.
It was
metaphor.
Just the calm that fishing brings, not about the act of swinging a thing back.
I can't go two levels deep. I'm not some kind of like Christopher Nolan thing. I hear about a dong and I think fishing pole. Yeah.
You thought he was taking the dinosaur's dong and whipping it back and forth. Mm-hmm. This is what you pictured
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like a river runs through it.
Yeah.
And he said fishing being a dong.
Yeah. No,
he said he was felt a sense of calm, like he was fly fishing.
Mm-hmm. And
not that he was
slant rhymes with
cum gutters.
With no dong.
Jeez. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
That's a half rhyme at best. Yeah, that was a scene where, again, like, Will Ferrell tries to save it by being very Will Ferrell about it.
Dumping, they extend the scene further. Head. It's one of those classic extend the scene longer. And I think I like that about it. The trying again. He's like, well, maybe more will help. Oh, nope. Yeah. Immediately. Like, that's classic Ferrell.
It's a thing where it's like, yeah, it just didn't work for me. Like, I get what they were going for. It just... I don't think the bit itself was bad. It just absolutely didn't work for me.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it going for that Letterman, let's make it go so long that it's funny again thing, I think it needed to go longer or a lot shorter. It was that kind of middle period.
Yeah, I'm fine with both of those takes.
They've discovered where the tech, they encounter this Enoch guy after the Sleestak Temple. He is like, oh, I've been imprisoned. You got to help me out. I'm a scientist, too. I enjoy that he is familiar with Will Ferrell because of his Matt Lauer interview. Right, wherever this is, they've seen the YouTube video.
Oh, that is funny. Yeah, yeah. All across the... But however, sorry, let's just go back to the time travel aspect. If there is time travel involved, they would have known about the secondary interview. Where Will Ferrell was triumphant and saying Matt Lauer can suck my balls or whatever the name of the second book was.
That was not, but the time hadn't shifted yet. Like that was still, that's this timeline that they're operating in where.
No, but they Enoch believe after successful. Love after love, which is how you can go behind the bookcase.
Oh.
All right.
I can feel something inside myself and it's making me very angry.
Yeah, it's a sense of, so kind of vomit rising up.
Rage. but then they, so their Enoch tracks down the Tachyon thing, which is out in the middle of this desert, which is very pretty looking. And there's all these, like, as we mentioned earlier, like leftover bits from different eras. And they find the raft that they've fallen, that they traveled in. And that's where your ice cream truck lands and all these little dinosaurs just murder the guy inside of it, which is very brutal.
Yeah. And then the T-Rexes come to feed upon them. And then,
And they find the Tachyon thing, and this was a runner that I got a little tired of, is that part of the Tachyon thing was built from a hard drive from a computer he had, and it's got show tunes on it. More specifically, a single show tune. I wish they would have had more, but it was just the one song from a chorus line, and I don't know.
I'm not familiar with chorus lines, so it felt like a deeper cut to me. And I'm like, I'm glad they didn't go with a more obvious, like, a West Side Story or a...
I'm with you, Rob, because I also didn't know that was the same song. Because there's a bunch of, like, stuff going on. Like, the one part where it's like, you have to step to the left or whatever. No, that's Rocky Horror Picture Show. But, like, where he's going through the pterodactyl den, he's, like, doing step instructions. But earlier in it, it sounded like that, I hope you get it. You know what it is? It reminds me of the jokes from The Simpsons. Where they'd reference old show tunes.
Yeah.
And that will just make me happy because I peaked in the 90s.
I just would have liked a wider variety because, I think it's just for the purposes of this gag, if you want to be like, oh, aren't these show tunes fruity, you can have more than one show tune.
I was trying to think of a punch up for that song. I think it was a fine choice, but I was trying to think of like a song that would have been...
I don't know. I only know the cool kind of musical theater, like Starlight Express.
Oh, in Hamilton. I love Hamilton. Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, that Lin-Manuel Miranda. Oh, he's just, you know what it is? He's funny, but he's also really good singing. Good, right? Oh, mm-hmm. I love
people,
him. You know, me and the missus.
Love to see him perform.
It
makes
so
people
good.
Very comfortable.
There, the other, I don't know, it's somewhere around here, but there is a everybody takes ayahuasca sequence, which doesn't really fit in the movie, and I don't think they do very well. But I did enjoy Anna Friel's translation gag.
Yes.
Where it's like, it's like you're going to have a zombie dig all up in your guts. Like, that building thing is really fun. And then they did absolutely nothing with that sequence other than them playing Marco Polo in a pool, which strikes me as maybe in the R-rated cut, there was some really fun... Fear and Loathing kind of, because scene. I'm sure there's Hunter S. Thompson references there that they cut.
Well, yeah, like that. I did read an interview with the director where he talked about how he was surprised he was able to sneak in the scene where they're all high, and he's like, I'll give you money if you kiss him. If you kiss the monkey, and he's like, I'll do it for free. Which, honestly, like, now, like, doesn't seem that weird, right. Like, that was this controversial thing to be in a movie. Right. But, yeah, like, so, yeah, they're celebrating because they got the tachyon thing back after a chase with the two Tyrannosaurus Rex or Allosaurus or whatever
they are. And explode the one.
They explode the one. And I liked how disgusting the exploding Allosaur thing was. Like, he launches some coolant into its mouth, and it blows up, and it just looks like a bunch of raw meat. And that's when that's so they, oh my God, we've got the tachyon thing, but then pterodactyl comes and swoops it up. And that's where you get the scene you were referencing where they have to go to the top of a mountain. Well, Will Ferrell gives up, at this moment. He's like, oh, I'm done. I'm going to just hang out in the back of this Cadillac and, put my hand down my pants and just quit.
When does the right around this time, they discuss the video where the monkey pisses in its own face. And I can't remember.
That's right about there. Yeah.
And I that was my college experience. That video specifically, like, was shared on my college campus. The monkey that pees his own face.
It's yeah, but, I mean, I think that was like the second YouTube video. Yeah. That was very popular back then.
There was a thing recently, like one of those like stupid begging for engagement posts that was like, you know, what was the first big viral video you remember?
Right.
And honestly, I think it was like the Tanook guy or like farting preacher.
I think mine was Mr. Hands.
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty early on.
Just like maybe you Google it. No one, yep. Please explain.
I like
ruining our listeners' search history.
Do not Google that. But yes, that was a classic, and I'm glad they referenced that rather than the more trendy like Charlie bit my finger. Because I think a monkey peeing in his face will always be funny.
Well, there's the one where the monkey smells, you know, scratches his butt and smells his finger collapses. That's also
all right. I can't spend the next half hour laughing. I gotta do the show here. But you know, here's also a classic.
It's not there yet. If this movie came out 10 years later, you know there would have been a Gangnam style joke around now with Chaka dancing to it.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I like just inventing shittier movies in my head. I'm like, hey, if this was 10 years later, this is good. I would be great in a writer's room to tell people to avoid.
I think some of it's the movies that we've watched that, like, you're beaten down enough that you're like, this could be worse, though. How can we get it there?
You know what's terrible, though, is the remit of the show is we don't watch movies that are, like, epically bad. We're actually watching movies that are supposed to be enjoyable, right. And still they're garbage heaps.
I mean, for as much as, like, this movie has been, like, I think even the head of Universal has said, Ron Meyer, president of Universal in 2011, said, Land of Lost was just crap. I mean, there's no excuse for it. The best intentions all went wrong.
Oh, that's harsh.
And I do think it's a little, I mean, I'm sure in the moment, because they took a bath on this movie, it made no money. I'm sure that was founded in that. But like, honestly, I've seen so much worse.
Absolutely. There was laughs to be had in this. Like, I definitely, I mean, not like 50% laugh rate, but I laughed at many of the jokes. And I don't laugh very often.
That's true. And I mean, like, again, this is a universe that old dogs exists. Like, you can't get that mad at this movie.
That's right. I don't remember what inspired him to come back and play the banjo, if there was a come to Jesus moment.
She gives him a rousing speech in the car about how she got kicked out of Cambridge because of him. He basically said, I'm going to Al Bundy myself. And then over the course of the night, he thought about it and then came back and with his apologetic song, singing what I presume to be the old theme song to the original show.
Yes.
Right.
And this honestly, this was probably the hardest I laughed in the entire movie. Just him stopping constantly, because as he's singing the song, this giant mosquito, it was in the trailer, but the giant mosquito lands on him and starts sucking his blood and sucks a lot of his blood. Like, his face immediately goes
white.
Oh,
that was gross.
But just him going like, oh God, I'm so tired. Yeah. Just killed me for whatever reason.
When he bends over and sees the other bug on his back.
Oh, it's the same bug.
It's just drinking more.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the deal? Oh, well, either way. When he bends over and sees the giant, like, it just engorged to like 40 times. That's a little gross.
He is so drained of, I mean, he's so pale and so deathly.
There is so much blood in that.
God. Very disturbing. And then the only callback is just the giant welt, which I thought they were going to address, and they don't.
Yeah. I was waiting for it to like to burst or something disgusting to happen, but I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, just one quick glimpse of the aftermath on his back. Not, I thought it was eggs. I thought maybe for a moment like, it had laid eggs in him or something. Mm-hmm. That would be more.
Oh, that could have gotten a lot worse. Yeah. Yes. If he had eggs burst. Ugh.
Yeah.
All right. Come on, guys. Let's remake the movie.
Like, so at the end, when he gets bitten, eaten by the Tyrannosaurus Rex, like it chomps into it and then causes a bunch of bugs to fly out. And that's how he escapes.
Well, all right. So that's it. Let's talk about that T-Rex thing. Because
We're not there because we have to talk about the eggs and how much we hate that scene.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Because, I mean, honestly, like, not a lot of stuff happens in this movie. But we referenced it earlier. They find that a pterodactyl has taken the tachyon converter, whatever, to its lair, which is on top of a volcano. Inside the rim of the volcano are a bunch of its eggs. And he's got to step around the eggs and while also
walk on the volcanic glass.
Yes.
To answer Rob's question earlier of inexplicably walking on, there's volcanic glass. Yeah. Because that answers the question.
That was the thing. So that they build up like, well, so he has to not break the surface tension, but also not get these eggs to hatch by dripping sweat on them and get the thing. And so he does it. There's this little montage of him getting ready where he like rolls down his socks, ties off his shirt or whatever. And just the payoff of that, him doing it, is so just lackluster. I was expecting a little bit more, you know, Catherine Zeta-Jones in Entrapment or something.
More dynamic, sure.
Yeah, because it was just there. And that was,
well, this would be where the other show tune would come in handy. Mm-hmm. Sure. If it kicks up into another, like, whatever, I don't know, show tunes, but like some upbeat show tune that he has to dance with the rhythm of the show tune around the little egg pillars
America,
or something.
America.
Right. Perfect. Or this is where Gangnam Style comes in. But yeah.
Yeah.
If it were that many years later, exactly.
But yeah.
Just imagine, whoop, 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 and him
going,
whoop,
yeah,
whoop,
I wanted a little bit more there. Not that, like, I wanted genuine tension from this movie, but just that, like, it needed to be a lot more fun than it was.
I liked the look of the lava and the eggs and I don't know. What do we think about Chaka singing?
Yeah,
it was short enough that I found it funny. Yeah,
it's a thing I could look at and recognize as a joke.
I like theme park theming. I've been into it more lately after listening to again. I'm a big podcast listener and.
Oh, what's the name of that one?
Podcast Park, the Ride. Podcast? I like Podcast the Ride. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this, like, their enthusiasm for like theming and like, you know, the fake. They have a whole episode where they rate the best fake rocks in theme parks. They're like, they do a final four of fake rocks. And so it makes me really appreciate. And this looked like a, you know, totally fake, but kind of, you know, just like a magical theme park land.
So now we're talking about better podcasts. Let's get back to this one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
After the volcano, that is when they do the I Just Want to Celebrate, which is it a nod to Three Kings?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah. Where they're, because they're in the desert and
and they're jumping in the air like they do in Three Kings, so that same song. And the motel pool, I find all that interesting. Then the Howling Loneliness, that's when the drug trip happens.
Yeah, that's when they take the drug. And yeah, this was another situation where like, oh, I kind of wish you would have done more with this. Because it was funny to see. We talked a little bit about this with Psycho Gorman, where it's like when you see the crazy ball from their point of view, it's this huge epic thing. Yeah. But then when you pull back and see it in reality, like it would have been a little bit more fun to play with this fantastical world.
Yes.
Maybe and see that and then come back and it's just Danny, you know, McBride in the pool going like, you know, if you're a cop, you have to tell me. But just seeing that side of it was a little lackluster.
100%. This was kind of the part of the movie that dragged the most.
I did like the bit with the giant crab. How just like what inconsequential it was.
And then the giant slice of lemon, it's just like totally Mel Brooks.
Yes, doesn't make any sense while it's there, but I love that it is there. But yeah, it felt a little unnecessary compared to, you know, what else was going on in the movie and where we were at in the movie. Like, if we're going to take this little detour, let's really do it, other than just kind of like, we have some time to eat up. We didn't know where else to put this bit, so.
And that's when Holly's kidnapped and finds out about the Zarn being killed. Fine plot, sure. I guess there's a plot to this movie, I suppose.
Yeah, theoretically. I mean, you could make that argument. Well, we didn't talk, I mean, we referenced it, but I mean, this, we're leading up to the big T-Rex fight, which, look, he covered himself in hadrosaur urine earlier, right? And they're all disgusted because he got pooped out. I can't stress enough, they had cloaca. See, cloaca, that's literally just brought up so I can say the word again. I'm sorry. I just said it so I could do that.
And I like how corny the Library of Skulls, I believe it's called, the tribunal, because it's just a bunch of skulls with green lights behind
them.
What
do you mean you believe it's called? Where the fuck did you read that?
I was looking up stuff about the movie earlier. Like, yeah, they don't mention. Alex, most
That's the most
trials
Carl Pilkington thing you've ever said.
The most trials are solved by a Library of Skulls. I wasn't sure if the American jurisprudence applied in the Land of the Lost.
Fair enough.
Having gone to jail several times for various crimes. No, but then they do the whole thing where, again, this felt kind of like unnecessary or just like where we are in the movie, like, let's move it along, where they watch the two slee stacks have sex.
Right.
And it's like, okay, fine. Like,
and then they wear the outfits for 4 seconds.
Yeah. It's just like there was a lot of like throwaway jokes that I'm like, I need these to be punchier, like Naked Gun, or to just not be here at all. They last a little bit too long. But yeah, so when they get there and he eventually, then there's a whole fight with the T-Rex and he remembers it's your own vault. And yes. It's like, I'm actually going to do it, and tries to, I don't know what his goal is, to somehow jump over the T-Rex.
And they're like, he's doing it. Like, what is he doing? You think he's going to, what? Like,
but
land on his back and
but
ride
he
him
jumps
up.
Right into the mouth. And the thing is like the way the movie sells it, I think it makes sense for this movie to not try to explain what he's actually going to be doing. But yeah, he goes in the mouth, and like then he shows up later. Like, it's very like immediate.
It's abrupt, yeah.
That is gone, and then he comes back. And yeah, you find out that he got pooped out by the dinosaur. And as dumb as it is, I did like that Danny McBride's character is like, that's really cool.
This is a highlight of the movie for me, honestly. It's such a dumb thing, but I love Danny McBride's performance of, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. The only thing that would make it cooler is if he jumped out, rode out his tail like Fred Flintstone, and there's a horrifically, but well, maybe he was good at the time, but the CGI of him sliding the tail is dog shit.
Spy Kids-esque.
That made me happy. Like, I just, I like a dummy being impressed by another dummy.
That whole scene actually was, like, for some reason, rendered worse than any other dinosaur scene. Like, the entirety of that. They ran out of budget for that. They ran out of time.
I don't think the movie lands it, but I think this movie does a pretty good, its attempt is to make it look like the character's intention. Like, if you're like if you're reading a book where you've got an idiot and the narrator kind of dumps things down, I think when Danny McBride is watching the scene, I think when they were making the movie, the idea was to make it look shittier, to have Danny McBride's kind of viewpoint, and it doesn't read. But this happens multiple times over the course of the movie. Like, anytime you're dealing with Holly's perspective, it's cleaner, it's crisper, it's like somebody that's not a fucking idiot viewing the world. Anytime you do Will Ferrell's, like the Matt Lauer stuff, I know where I'm going. No one else does, I assure you. But I think that's what the swing and a miss of this movie was.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I never really put that together.
Just cut all of what
it's let's watch it again.
Yeah, let's watch it right now. I was just thinking,
let's watch
how,
the 1991 remake.
How long we've been recording is that we have a movie like thematically rich like Ad Astra, and we're like, we can barely do an hour on that. Just going on about Land of the Lost.
Yeah, I could talk all day about anything.
But this is a case again where, like, so this big, you know, thing happens with the Tyrannosaurus Rex or whatever, but they still have to go deal with Enoch or whatever. And this was where it's just like the movie needs to just end, and it won't. Cause like eventually, so they fight Enoch and they beat Enoch or whatever, but then Danny McBride's like, I'm going to stay behind.
How do you feel about the Danny McBride meets the Chaka's wives?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Because then you get back and...
I didn't mean that apology. It's empty.
It was another example of like this throwaway joke going on for too long. Like, these are your women. Now we're going to hang out for a bit and listen to Danny McBride kind of riff on that and be his Danny McBride. Like, oh, I'm like basically his best friend or whatever. Or it's not worth it if you just went like, those are your women, boing, and then that's it, you know?
I don't remember this dragging. I mean, I also don't remember liking it that much, but I don't remember this part dragging. I wonder if the tachyons got a hold of you or something.
That probably is what I was drinking a lot of tachyons at the time.
Yeah.
Now, John, would you like it better if he ripped his skin off before the mating and it turns out he's a slee stack underneath, like David Icke has thought the entire time, assuming Danny McBride is Jewish?
That's a little intellectual for me. What I would have liked is if he just like turned to the camera and like rolled his eyes really quickly, and then they sped up the film and he's trying to chase them around. Maybe like a fun song is playing in the background.
Ooh. Like a something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Okay. And then and maybe like a cop is chasing him.
I hate to backtrack, but one joke I really did enjoy was, okay, so Holly and Marshall kiss, and then he wants them to go, and he says, "I don't love you," and he throws a rock at her, and I really enjoyed that.
That was a fun throwback to me, because like one of the things that I love about Anchorman is that they're all a bunch of little boys, and then an actual like woman shows up and they don't know what to do. That's how he knows how to get rid of her, is like treat her like Harry and the Hendersons, right. You know. And I got a big kick out of that. Yeah.
So yeah, sorry, I had to go back to that. But and then the movie ends, and then there's you're right. The Matt Lauer sucks, and Matt Lauer does an amazing job. Matt Lauer's a great guy.
Two thumbs up to everything.
We've been pretty on flipping here, and I just want to be clear. I don't like his acting. I like the way he behaves in person.
No, right. I think he's good in this movie. People liked him in this movie. I think everybody agreed he did a good job.
Like what I've said in the past about like I really hate Kevin Spacey's acting, but I agree wholeheartedly with the way he lives his life. And John signed off on this.
Well, you bring it up every episode, regardless of what movie we're doing.
Work in
Boss Baby. Well, maybe
talking about the Lows. I mean, look, talking about Boss Baby. If you don't bring up Kevin Spacey's,
Have you done Boss Baby?
We did Boss Baby.
Oh, I missed that. I have to go back on that because I have some real problems with the world building in that.
So did we. Why does he have money? Why does money exist?
My question is, what is the mom's story? She's pregnant, and then a child arrives in a cab, and then she's not pregnant. I want to know what happened to her in between those two things.
I think this gets brought up in our episode. Yeah. I think we cover that.
Yeah. In fact, I was just reading, there's a philosophical symposium happening right now about Boss Baby. I'm sure it does not bring up plot elements, but we were not invited, and I'm furious about it.
I watch shitty kids movies with my kid all the time, and I don't usually have a problem with whatever world they decide to build, whatever nonsense, it usually makes sense. This is one that I could not get over.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like with Sonic, when we watched Sonic, basically the end result was like, this is not a movie for us. This is a movie for 9-year-olds, and I'm sure if I was 9, I'd love it. Whereas Boss Baby, I'm like, what the fuck do you think you're trying to do here?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, moving along is movie ends.
Well, there's Matt post-credits. Lauer can
suck it, and I assume both of you hung out after the credits, because we're trained by Marvel, even though that happens later. I sat there and there's an after credit sequence.
And these credits weren't terrible either. I think they were animated nice. Yeah. As well. Little baby Sleestak is a horrible. It's cute and
horrible. Yeah,
it's a horrible.
Yeah, but they reference earlier in the film that how Sleestaks can breed very quickly and take over. And I don't know if there's. I mean, it probably needs another Sleestak to fuck. But like. You know what's weird? It's movies like this where it sets up a sequel. You know, there's like those movies that there's like 7 sequels no one's ever seen. There was like one popular movie, and then there's like
Universal
9.
Soldier.
Yeah. Why is there no Land of the Lost 2? Like, I mean, the movie bombed. Why didn't they like go? Hey, the company that makes Transmorphers, which I can't remember their name.
Yeah, it's not Full Moon Entertainment. That's a different thing.
No, but it's on that. Like, fuck it, Full Moon Entertainment's perfect. Why don't they go, hey, Full Moon Entertainment, give us $2,000 and we'll give you the rights to Land of the Lost because we bombed horribly. And they make a $5 million sequel to it.
It would also be pretty impressive. Like they would do just a straight, like, it's a serious sci-fi thing.
You know, exactly. But why not? I mean, they lost money on it. Yeah. Just fucking dick.
But yeah. I much prefer the asylum.
Yeah.
The more like the end question mark versus like we're going to spend a lot of time setting up a sequel. It just leaves the door open in case you're like, did you guys care for this? We can have more if you want. And America went no, thank you.
But yeah, it went. We made 60-something million on our $100 million budget.
We generally had positive things to say about this movie, but it is like it's a nothing movie.
You know, when people say, hey man, just turn your brain off and enjoy a flick. I often, my response is always like, I don't know where I heard this originally. It might have been a John Myers-ism. Was like, that's what you have to do to survive torture, right? To turn off your brain to survive being tortured. And so I'm like, I wouldn't sell a movie by saying, yeah, it's just like pretend you're being tortured. I'm really glad. I think going into this movie with dirt level expectations really helps it. It's way better than everybody, than you heard, and as far as Will Ferrell movies, I think it might be top 10.
I've certainly seen worse. I would actually argue, for as much as I like Adam McKay and Will Ferrell stuff, I think I probably like this better than Talladega Nights.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Well, Has Will Ferrell been in 11 movies?
Yeah,
at least.
Okay, yeah. Here, then I can't necessarily agree it's top 10.
I'm gonna name a couple of movies that he's the lead in. I'm not gonna say like Zoolander because he's just he's a side character. I'll name a couple of Will Ferrell where he leads the movies, and you'll say if you liked it better, if you like Land of the Lost better or less. Anchorman,
yeah, of course, better. Yeah.
Step Brothers is better than Land of the Lost.
You never saw it.
Oh, Step Brothers is good.
Elf is close, but I still think I like Elf.
I enjoy Elf. I have a crush on Zoe Deschanel from that movie.
Sure. I enjoy Elf.
As we discussed, I'm sure, for an hour. Yeah.
That was most of it. Yeah. The other guys, I barely remember. Him and Mark Wahlberg are a cop team.
Yeah, see, I did see
that movie. Yeah. Actually, I did like that. Yeah,
I liked it, but I don't know if it's better or worse than Land of the Lost. I don't remember. I think Land of the Lost is definitely better than Blades of Glory.
Obviously. Didn't see that, but that looked fucking awful.
It's real bad. Old School, is that a Will Ferrell lead, or is he just like second to the Wilson brother?
I've never seen it, so I think that's co-lead.
I like Land of the Lost more than Semi-Pro.
Yeah,
I think what was either. Semi-Pro?
That's the one where he has the throw and isn't Andre 3000.
Oh, no, might be my favorite Will Ferrell movie. I adore that. Yeah, I find that movie very funny. Woody Harrelson is amazing in that film.
Oh, well, I'll rewatch that one. I think maybe I don't remember anything about it. Do I like Land of the Lost more than Anchorman 2?
I honestly do. I would say that I do, simply because I had such like I love Anchorman, and Anchorman 2 was so just like, okay, I guess we're doing this now.
If I hadn't seen Anchorman and watched Anchorman 2 first, I would have liked it more than Land of the Lost. But because I'd seen Anchorman, which is I think a pretty fucking fun, enjoyable movie. Yeah, Anchorman 2. Yeah, probably worse than Land of the Lost.
I didn't see The Campaign with Zach Galifianakis, and I don't think that's probably very good.
We watched it at movie night, actually.
I don't remember The Campaign.
Because it's not worth remembering.
Okay. Yeah. And then The House with Amy Poehler, that was fine.
I never saw that. It starts at a casino.
Yeah. Holmes and Watson, I haven't seen because I heard it was just unwatchable.
Actually, Holmes and Watson was nowhere near as bad as people said it was.
Oh, good.
I mean, don't watch it.
Okay.
But it's totally like, oh, this is just an unoffensive thing that's going to happen for an hour and a half in front of my eyeballs.
How does it stack up to Land of the Lost?
I'm a pretty big, like, I've read all the Sherlock Holmes stories like multiple times. And just the fact that they're referencing it kind of, I'm a biased interpreter, but I would Holmes
just
Watson.
Just because a book is in it, you like it.
No, it's a book I really like. And Stephen Fry reads the audiobook. So, you know, I'm who's, predisposed. Who's that?
Richard Pryor's brother? Got it.
Oh, a joke from the 70s. I get it.
Yeah. The last one I'll check with you is what's better, Land of the Lost or The Landlord? The Funny or Die video with Adam McKay's little girl.
I gotta go the swearing baby.
Wait, The Landlord, that's the one with Thor's hilarious roommate, right?
I don't know. Anyway, thank you guys.
Yeah, that was Land of the Lost. We did it.
Right, Land of the Lost. All right, I think we all know what we think. All right, so we have a segment on the show where we recommend things, and I think we can't do anything but recommend the classic Greensleeves, the song, which apparently Rob does a whole podcast about, which I can't imagine doing more than like one episode. But I mean, whatever, dude, you're more talented talker than I am. That's what my recommendation is going to be.
That's Green Shirts, which
I've listened to two episodes of, which is sounds like I'm being shitty, but that's I did the Alex cast for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever listened to more than one episode of any fucking asshole that showed up on my show. So you are double the amount.
I appreciate that. I've been told that my co-hosts laugh at me more than I deserve, which I think is true. I just had one friend that said, yeah, they really laughed at your jokes. Like, really hard. I was like, well, I think you're right.
It's fine.
I know.
Yeah.
But it is Green Shirts, Newbies Trek to the Next Generation. And yes, you can also, I have a screen printer. I make t-shirts at shirtnerdery.com. It's just a Comic-Con last weekend selling t-shirts. I have a little retail store in Milwaukee called Made in Milwaukee, where I sell my shirts and other
Milwaukee, Oregon.
That's right. Milwaukee, Oregon. We're owned by Dark Horse Comics. We're right next door.
Is that true?
That's awesome. Our landlord. Yeah. Our landlord. Yeah. Is Dark Horse.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah. Have you ever seen their movie Virus that they made with Jamie Lee Curtis?
Oh, wait, maybe I did.
Yeah. It's they made a lot of money on the Max movie and then made Virus, and it's very bad.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, we should watch that. After we do Step Up 3D.
Yeah.
Do you guys have recommendations? I want to hear what you guys are watching.
I revisited Freaked. The Alex Winter.
Yeah,
it's available for free on YouTube. I found it because I was thinking about like goofball, like dynamic goofball science fiction comedy kind of things, and that came to mind. And I found it on, and I loved it when it's I saw crazy. It on like Cinemax. It's, I mean, there's certain jokes that don't hold up in 2021, whatever. But man, it's fun, and the effects are great, the makeup stuff, and just
Mr. T,
yeah. But the anything with Stewie, the little troll kid. Just killed me. It's very cartoonish, and I got a kick out of it.
So I
recommend checking that out. Like I said, it's free on YouTube.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Well, I've recommended this on the show before, or at least referenced it, but I can't tell you how much I enjoyed Wynonna Earp. And I'm not kidding.
That show was
great. Wynonna Earp. It's okay. Wyatt Earp, but yeah. A lady.
Okay.
I watched it immediately after watching Van Helsing, but a lady. But I finished the entire run of the show, and it is dog shit enjoyable. It's so fucking bad, but it's great. Like, at some point they realized, oh, we know what show we're making, let's just fucking do it, and they just I don't care. This whole weird backstory with like demons and whatever, one of the main characters is gonna be half angel. That's what happened. Hey, you know what happens to that show? Doc Holliday from the Old West, he becomes immortal and trapped in a well for 100 years so he can be in the modern times in the show. And then in season 4, they turn him into a vampire.
Okay.
I'm kind of
on board with this. It's like there's that Rob Lowe series where it was like a lawyer show, and they knew they were going to get canceled. So in the last season, they just made one of the characters a serial killer. They had him like kill off other characters. I'm like, that's amazing.
That's what this show, it is. They just turn into the skid. And when I say recommend it, I really mean, if you're like a basement dwelling weirdo that has nothing else going on in your life and you could burn 60 hours, fucking Wynonna Earp. So Wynonna, Rob, why do we recommend something?
God, it's really hard. I just watch whatever everybody's watching lately, like whatever everybody's talking about. Whatever's brand new. You know what? Something that I always want to know if what people think about is the show Maniac on Netflix with Emma Stone and Jonah Hill. That's one that I really enjoyed. I think about going back for a rewatch. I think it's really bizarre. And what's his name?
Justin Theroux.
Justin Theroux is like, I never recognize him. And I'm really impressed by his range in this show. And I kind of want to know if other people like it. So check that out. Netflix's Maniac. The first episode starts pretty slow. And then it goes into this whole surreal inside their brains, different genres, styles, every episode. It's something that I enjoyed like probably a year ago when I watched it, and I just want more people to see it.
Well, I've seen Maniac Cop, so I feel like I'm pretty covered at this point. All right, so John, I think it's easier to just say this now. What was the movie you want to watch next time? We're just doing that one.
Malignant.
Malignant. Oh, next episode, everybody go and watch Malignant.
Yeah, it's free on HBO Max.
It is a story of a young, sexy doctor that's trying to cure cancer, and he's in the middle of the rainforest, and that lady from The Sopranos shows up. But oh no, I can't find the cure for cancer. It's still malignant. The sugar ants must have. This is the movie.
Who's the woman from The Sopranos in this?
Edie Falco.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
No, it's the
woman.
Lady that plays Dr. Melfi.
Oh, Lorraine Bracco.
Lorraine right. Bracco and
are you referencing Medicine Man?
That's the one I'm going with. Because Malignant is what cancerous tumors are, and that's what I do is say horrible things about horrible stuff, and hope people laugh at it because I'm from the 90s.
That's right. That's all we know. Yeah. So tune in next time. It'll be just us. Rob's not welcome back.
Oh yay! And then Step Up in 2 weeks, right?
And then immediately in a Step Up 3D.
I thought Step Up in 2 weeks was the prequel. In the coming weeks, if you guys want to talk about Step Up 3D and throw it on the feed, I'm not such a demanding taskmaster that like feel free to.
Let's give it some time. But I would love to be back in order to do that. I don't know if actually I think I still have a lot to say about it, but who knows?
I'm the twins alone. I have a lot to say about.
I guess it's harder to talk about the the beats of the movie when you're like, oh, and then he does this dance move, and then he does this dance move. And
but
then
that's what I was worried
locks,
about.
And then he pops, but then guess what? Locks into a pop. I do. There's, it's ridiculous.
It's got a plot. There are scenes in between the dancing scenes. Mm-hmm. And though,
what show had Moose the Lady in it? Because when you're referencing Moose before, that popped in my head. It was something from our age group. There was like a maybe like a redheaded, a kind of Rubenesque lady, like a child called Moose.
Oh, you know what you're thinking of? And it's not redhead. Is you can't do that on television.
Is that what I'm going for? Yeah. It's something from childhood.
Yeah, because they called out. I think her name was Christine, and they called her Moose, which is like, and there was like several jokes about how ugly and awful she was. It's like, yes, this is a child.
That is my memory of it. It was like a young person be like, oh, cool, you're just going to make your career on being awkward looking.
When you Google character named Moose, you get Moose from Step Up, then you get Moose from Step Up again, then you get Moose from Archie, and then you get Bullwinkle, and then you get Morris the Midget Moose from a Disney thing, then again. But then most of the hits are Moose from Step Up 3D.
Excellent. That's the way it should be. Yes. Thank you, Rob, for joining us. Yeah. Everyone check out Green
Thank
Shirt.
You, Rob.
Not just the episodes that I'm on. Like it's a fun show,
but do check out the ones John's on first.
Just because, Marcy's leaving doesn't mean you should stop listening.
That's right. Bobby is going to be a fine replacement. Bobby Blue. She's also very great. We didn't want, and we're not just shoehorning in another female because we were like, but we also were like, we have a lot of great female talent, and we don't want to introduce a third, you know, white guy.
A white guy with different facial hair.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to be great. And you don't have to like watch all of Star Trek and get up to speed. You just watch whatever episode we're doing. Yeah. And I love you. Goodbye.
Okay. you heard it from Rob. He loves you. Not me. Yeah. I'm still mad.
I'm indifferent.
All right. Well, see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.